Hello, everybody from the nation's capital. Welcome to an episode of the Politatine Podcast. My name is Damian Galvin, and I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Max Kalman. Max?
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Today, so for those of you that are consistent listeners of the show, you might have noticed that last week we took kind of an unannounced break. And that's because, I guess it was what? Over the weekend, or I think it was Thursday night or Friday night, October 6th, that missiles were sent over from Gaza into Israel by the jihadist terrorist organization known as Hamas. And this is a very difficult topic. And something that I have cared passionately about for a very long time, and I'm sure that Max feels the same way. So we thought that it was appropriate to take a week off to figure out how to best address a situation that is nuanced, that is generational. I mean, this has been going on for, you know, approaching 100 years in 30? So yeah. It's been going on for almost a century, and even more than that. I mean, it dates back even further than that at this point. What we decided ultimately is that we were just going to take this episode slow and try to speak a little bit more from our hearts while still obviously implementing an important filter, which is our minds, which is the logic, because I think that that's something that a lot of people aren't doing right now with the situation, because it's such an emotional one. It really is.
Yeah, and also part of the reason why we wanted to take the time is there has been a massive loss of not just military but civilian life in the past, over the course of the past week or so.
Yeah,
and that makes this both a very sensitive and also a very emotional topic. And I think it's also important for us to take the space to let it breathe out of the simple respect for everyone involved and all the people who have been hurt and the thousands and approaching millions who are being displaced.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you 100%, and that's ultimately why we did decide to take this break. And I think it was good. I think that it did something that also happened, which I guess we can delve into a little bit, is that the fact that we have had time to take, you know, and to rest, to think about how we're going to approach this. I think the media has also had time to think, the mass media, and I think the masses as well, the American population and the rest of the world. And they're starting to realize that, because initially, right, so let's go back to what started this whole event, which was the Hamas airstrikes on Israel, and it was tragic. It was unexpected, at least from what we, in the general, even in the media, I mean, we pay such close attention to the news, being involved with Politatine and just in our personal lives, you just never saw this coming. You had heard about some conflicts that had been happening in Gaza, or at least I had. Some IDF soldiers had harmed some Palestinians, and there was, you know, the typical stuff that is involved in this conflict and has been for decades at this point. But you never expect what Hamas did that day. And it was a tragedy. It was an act of terror. And I think that most people reacted with just that in mind immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, first and foremost, it was an extremely violent act of terror on largely civilians. There were a lot of civilians, Israeli civilians, killed by Hamas on that day. And as much as I agree with that part of what you said, I wish I could say I was surprised. I wish I could say that I was shocked, or there has been so much conflict that precipitated that exact moment. I don't even think it's necessarily accurate to say that everything started on that day. Like you've been saying, everything started decades ago.
Yeah,
and
100%.
When you don't take that into account, it skews your perception of what's been happening. And
get closer to the microphone just so we can hear.
I think it's when taking that into account, you can see how, although this was an unprecedented attack from Hamas, this was not a surprising one to me, at least. The biggest surprise in my mind is the scale. I think a lot of people.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. I'd
casually
say that's fair.
Unaware of the fact that Hamas could do something like this,
yeah,
and that they had the infrastructure to do something like this.
Yeah. Yeah. How it was done, I think, is more surprising than the fact it was done.
Yeah, definitely. And I also think that people can be too close-minded on both sides and not very understanding of the fact that at the core of what's happening, children are dying on both sides of an arbitrary border that neither of these groups actually set. And when you look at it like that, and you just understand the fact that children who are entirely innocent are being killed for the actions of the adults around them, it sheds new light onto the issue that I don't think people are ready enough to recognize. I don't think people are fully recognizing, and I don't mean that they don't understand it, and I don't mean that even if you're listening to this, you don't believe this. I think people aren't processing the simple fact that regardless of ethnicity or religion or creed, one baby's life has no more value than another baby's life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And regardless of the color of their skin.
Yeah. And
as much as you can know that, I think it's another thing to process it and apply that to the situation we're seeing now.
Yeah. No, 100%. And, you know, you mentioned earlier that they're dying as a consequence of the people around them's actions, but it's, or the adult around them actions, but it's also the consequence of the actions of adults decades ago.
Yeah.
The adults that are dead. Adults that that made promises to two sides that they could not keep. You know, this was what, 1917, right? You have the promise. That, you know, the land that the Palestinians live on is going to remain their land. And then, you know, circa World War II, you have this other promise by the British. The same thing. And now we find ourselves in 2023 dealing with the repercussions of... You know, this is interesting. Yesterday we got the opportunity to, and I'm so thankful that we did, to go listen to a presidential candidate speak. And they kept saying that a lot of the things that we deal with today are a result of 20th century thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, what we're seeing here. We're seeing 20th century thinking take a hold of the whole world.
Yeah.
And
I think that can be most readily apparent in the fact that for the majority of the 20th century, and, you know, basically a lot of human history before that, we thought ethnicity was real. Like, we thought ethnicity was something that's built into you and that is not
biologically
arbitrary.
Real.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We also thought it was concrete. It's something that you can map out. It's something you can easily define.
Oh, yes.
And we thought it's something that held more... We thought it's something that held importance to people's... How people act and how people behave, as opposed to the culture they're brought up in.
Mm.
And so, in that sense, you see ethnic conflict all over the world. And I think that saddens me the most, because it is very old thinking that is not nearly as ubiquitous and universal as some people would want to make it. And I think in a lot of cases, you still see people treating foreign policy and treating, you know, all international affairs from a very ethnic basis as opposed to a people basis.
Yeah.
People aren't recognizing that if an Israeli was born and raised in Gaza, like by Palestinians and raised in that culture, they would behave the exact same way that the Palestinians do, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Once you realize that, it becomes so clear that the thinking of our ancestors and of people who were genuinely racist, genuinely thought that your race is a major factor of who you are and the type of person you are, is causing the deaths of thousands in this case and in so many other cases. And I think that's truly saddening to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's the most important takeaway. How real something so arbitrary can be. And I think that there's something to be said about our generation too. I think that this is one of the first times that I have seen our generation so genuinely split on something. Like, think about most major issues, right? You think about the legalization of marijuana. Our generation probably supports that 90%+.
Yeah.
Gun regulation. Generation supports that an insane amount.
Yeah, universal healthcare.
Universal healthcare.
LGBTQ rights.
All of these practices.
You could go on and on and on and on.
Yeah. But this conflict, it seems 50-50.
Yeah.
It seems very 50-50, which I think is just interesting. But I think it's also interesting because we would all agree on what we had just said. You could be listening to this as someone that is a Zionist, or you could be listening to this as someone living and existing in Gaza at this very moment, and you are around our age. You would agree with how this podcast started. There wouldn't be no disagreement. Now, from here on out, I think that there is some disagreement, but I think that it's an important conversation that a lot of people aren't ready to have. And I think that this is going to be a difficult way to navigate this. But I think it has similar... I think that there's something specifically American about the way that we're thinking about this conflict. And I think it goes back to 9/11. And what I mean by that is that obviously no one that died that day deserved to die. I think there are very rare cases, if any, I genuinely can't think of any, where someone deserves to die. So that goes without being said. However, we never sit back and look at that situation and say, hey, what was at the root cause of this so that this never happens to another mother again? So that this never happens, so that we don't have to have US citizens jumping out of the 73rd floor window, throwing chairs at it because they would rather fall to their death than burn alive. How do we come to a concrete plan of action to ensure that this doesn't happen? We never do that. We just say, oh my God, 9/11 was an atrocity. Thank goodness that we had the war on terror immediately after to get our get backs. Because that's all we wanted. We just wanted our get backs.
Yeah, and we definitely got it.
And we got it in at the expense of millions of citizens as well. 30 million people displaced, over a million casualties, 750,000, by the most by our own estimates, 750,000 civilians we killed. We never sit back and look at that and go, okay, what caused this event? Is there anything? Did we possibly fund and give money to the person that then went on to organize this atrocity? Did we provide him with weapons and training? And are we doing that today? And if we look at that, we would have a lot more comprehensive and nuanced, and we would take something beneficiary away from this loss of lives that happened on September 11th. And I think it's the same thing that happened in this situation. And again, this is something that's going to be held, I think, in extreme belief by our generation, but I don't know if other, I don't think older generations would agree with this. No one is inherently, or the vast majority of people, are not inherently violent.
No.
They're not inherently radical. What leads someone to launch missiles across a border? What led them to do that? Could it potentially be that these people have existed in an apartheid state for decades? Maybe. Could it potentially be that 50% of people that live in Gaza are under the age of 18? Maybe. Maybe that could be it. Could it be that Gaza experiences 59% unemployment? That might be it. Or the fact that the land that they're living on shrinks by the day? Maybe. What about the fact that they don't have any clean water, that 97% of their water is toxic? That might do it. And what about the fact that they were born into a confined space that is held together by walls with barbed wire on the top, and that since they were born, that is all they have known? Maybe that might drive someone to do something insane, to do something terrible, to commit an atrocity, to harm others. Each of these individuals, and this is, there's no excuse for that. There's no excuse for violence, but there is a cause for it.
Mm.
There's no excuse for it, but there is a cause. Mm. And if you cannot comprehend that, then you will never get to the root of it. Each of these individuals are going through an extreme mental health crisis. You thought COVID was bad? You thought being in your house was bad? Imagine existing your whole life in an open-air prison.
I can't. And I think it's also just to sit on that for another second. That was very powerful, the fact that there's no excuse. No one ever should, no one ever should excuse violence, especially against a civilian population. If you do that, you are an insane person. But what you must do, the imperative you have, is to understand the cause. Just sit with that for another moment. Understand what could possibly lead people to do such terrible things. And, you know, to your point, I just felt like that was something that people need to really process and think about.
Yeah.
Because I think so much of it, you know, I've seen a lot of, you know, we've all seen a lot of Instagram posts and people on their stories and in their captions and whatnot posting from various perspectives on the issue. People are very ready anytime someone makes an empirical statement about the reality of the situation preceding the attack that happened and immediately say, you're excusing this violence. You're a terrible person. You want another Holocaust. To me, that's extremely disrespectful and disingenuous. It places blame on people who are trying to understand how something like this could happen and places it back on the fact that you think that these people are inherently evil. And that no matter where they were born or what situations they lived around, they were going to grow up, they were going to organize into a terrorist cell, and they were going to kill civilians. When you place it like that, I don't think anyone on the other side would agree. But when you frame it without that important clarification, it's so easy for people to say you're excusing violence on this side or excusing violence on that side, or you're making excuses for this side, or you're saying these babies should have died. You need to understand the roots before you can even think about approaching the tree. As someone who has had, who has ancestors who perished in the Holocaust, and a generation of my family wiped out entirely off the face of the earth, I can't fathom anyone trying to excuse or justify this violence from either side. And I also can't understand why people who are trying to come up with what the cause of this is, with how we can prevent it, with real solutions that aren't, let's wipe an entire population off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
How those people are blamed for that exact thing, to be justifying and excusing these actions. No one can justify and excuse any of the things that are happening right now. You can't. You can't say that these people deserve to die because of the situation they were born in. You can't.
Yeah.
What you can and must do is understand. The more you can understand about the reality of what's happening now, the history of what's been happening, and all of the connecting dots in between, the more we can actually think and do things and take action to prevent what's happening now from happening in the future.
You know, something else too is, and we reiterate it again, it is imperative that we call out acts of violence and declare that there are no excuses. There are no excuses for acts of violence, and we should call them out when we see them, which is why when we have seen, me and you, and I'm sure plenty listening, acts of violence being committed by the IDF, we call them out, not because they're the IDF, but because they're committing an act of violence. They're doing something wrong. When I see an act of violence occur in my day-to-day life, I don't think, hey, first, who is this person? Are they Arab? Are they Hispanic? Are they white? No, I think this person's committing an act of violence. I should probably try to stop them in some capacity. Or at the very least, call them out. But it has felt as though we are also only calling out certain acts of violence. And it's especially disheartening to me because obviously I don't have the personal connection to, I mean, at least not as direct or as I mean, nothing can compare to the Holocaust. Let's not kid ourselves here. And as you were speaking, I thought about the only time that maybe death is okay. And it was in killing the people that were committing, doing the Holocaust. That is the only time when it was okay to kill Nazis. You killed Nazis because they were doing something egregious. And even then, a lot of these young men were also just subject to their circumstances. If they had been born in the United States, they would be fighting on our side. And there was, it would, you know, there's interesting anecdotes as well, going back to this, to the arbitrary nature of it, of like people that left the United States that have lived in the U.S. their whole lives to go fight on the German side. There was people that decided to go and commit these atrocities. But again, you called them out and we called them out. The United States of America called them out and we made them pay and we held them accountable for their actions because they were exterminating families off of the face of this earth for no other reason than they were Jewish. 47 Palestinian families have been taken off the registrar. Not one remaining ancestor in those 47 families exists. Their bloodline is gone. Not a trace of their DNA will ever exist for the rest of the existence of humanity and beyond. They have ceased to exist. Think about that. Why? Why? We said never again. And we say never again. But never again means never again. It means for anybody, never again. This is a difficult situation. It's a very nuanced one.
And I do think that that also is a great point. As much as, you know, you drew the 9/11 comparison previously, we said never again so much. We hear it year after year on its anniversary of the day of that attack. And yet, within the preceding 3 years, we had killed untold numbers, thousands and thousands of civilians, in precipitating wars in the Middle East. There were nearly 2,000 civilians who died on 9/11. And as you were saying before, 750,000 civilians who died as a result of that attack in the Middle East.
And 30 million displaced. 30 million.
Think about how that... Think about the objective nature of it. Never again for you, but just wait for what I'm going to do. Never again will we ever, or should we ever, see this type of violence, but only on this side of the border.
Yeah, unless.
Only on this side.
We should never do this again, unless.
Unless it's us.
Yeah, doing it to someone else.
If people across the world cannot move past this visceral gut feeling of revenge, it's hard to see a path forward for us.
Yeah.
If people can't look at the fact that someone is in dire straits, someone's in poor conditions, someone might even be committing horrendous acts of violence. And if we can't take away the fact that we want them to die and suffer for what they did, if we can't move past that and say, how can we genuinely make sure an event like this will not happen again? How can we genuinely make sure to stop this cycle of violence from occurring further? What can we do to prevent it? And it's more difficult when you have an active conflict and you see the need to defend yourself or you think you're going to get killed.
Mm.
But it's a lot easier to think and look at that and to even consider it when you're on the side holding all the cards and when you're on the side with the institutional power and you're on the side with an immense military and you're on the side with military backing from the largest military in the world by tenfold.
Yeah. It's next 26 allies combined, next cetera, nine militaries combined.
When you're on that side, you are the one with the opportunity to step back, to take a breath, and realize what caused what is happening right now.
Mm. Mm.
When you are on the side, and I think, you know, you can go back to Russia and Ukraine, I don't think us, as much as we think no one should die, say that, you know, Ukraine should not fight back against Russia when they are actively attacking them.
Encroaching on their territory.
And encroaching on their territory.
Taking their homeland.
And placing their people into their homes. When this is occurring on a near daily basis, I don't think, you know, I don't think anyone is saying that they shouldn't be able to fight back. And that they shouldn't and don't have the right of self-defense. It moves past self-defense when you are the one perpetuating the cycle of violence.
Mm.
When you are the one in the position to stop throwing punches, when the other person's on the floor, knocked out, you're the one in the position to be like, am I going to now kill this person that they're defenseless? Or am I going to take them to get help? Am I going to try and figure out why they would even think about committing such a terrible act of violence? And how could I prevent this person from being in this situation again?
Yeah, yeah.
Only when you are the one with the power and the influence and the sheer might to make that determination only then can you stop violence.
Mm. Mm.
The Palestinians, for years and years, up until 2003, when Hamas was voted into some semblance of power, and, you know, they've had a lot of fighting. There's a lot to get into in that history.
Also, only in Gaza. That's only something in Gaza. We haven't brought up either. We've only been talking about Gaza. The West Bank does not have a Hamas.
There are no terrorists in the West Bank.
There are no terrorists in the West Bank.
And yet we've seen an extraordinary surge of violence in the West Bank, as well as the fact that since Israel started settling in the West Bank, there are now 500,000 Israelis living on what was once Palestinian territory, on occupied Palestinian territory.
Mm.
And we've seen a surge of violence from the IDF and from Israeli settlers against Palestinians in the West Bank who have done nothing. There's no even semblance of an argument to be made that those people deserve to be killed, brutalized, and also live through the conditions that they live through every single day.
Yeah, just existing in that is violence. Is that not an act of violence?
Entirely.
Just and existing in those conditions. That's a violence every day.
When you have to go through checkpoints to go anywhere you want to go, when you have to, when you cannot leave the place where you live, you do not have freedom of movement. You do not have freedom of expression. You have what is effectively no freedom in a prison without bars and one giant wall. The cause of the violence we've seen, you cannot put that cause on those who are reacting to a wall being put up around them and who are reacting to having no water, no clean water, who are reacting to years of blockades, who are reacting to years of human rights abuses, to illegal settlements that have been going on for years, wherein people will just get kicked out of their houses and replaced with an Israeli. For the sole reason of ethnic purity in those areas. The cause of rising up from that and forcing yourself to resort to violence is not you for looking up at that wall from when you were young. It's the cause of the person who built that wall. And that doesn't mean that you have any justification for killing people who literally did not build that wall and who were just born into this situation and who, you know, by happenstance happened to be near it. It's not their fault. It's the fault of the institutions and the people with the power who are able to successfully indoctrinate millions into building and sustaining an open-air prison in which you are kept.
Yeah. You know, it's, I use a lot of, I guess to bring it back a little bit more casually, I use a lot of sports analogies, obviously, big sports guy. And, you know, we keep talking about history and history, and we were mentioning the Never Again stuff. And in sports, you watch film to look at your mistakes. And that's the way that I view history. You don't look at history as a whole, really, to look at the great things that happen. When you're learning history, you're taught wars. You're taught battles, you're taught conquests, you're taught about the bad stuff. But like film and sports, if you solely study history, if you just study film, but you don't go and practice, you don't go and say, how can I get better from these mistakes that I made? And implement procedures to correct those mistakes? Then you're going to fail. And that's what we have done in this case. We have only watched the film. We have only reviewed history. We said, never again. Oh, look at that bad play. Look at that bad throw that I made. I'll never make that throw again. But then you go home and you sit on your couch. Right? We said, look at that atrocity. Let's ensure that that never happens again. And then did what?
You don't watch film to reinvigorate your hate for the other team. You don't watch film to be like, okay, now I'm more pissed and I'm more angry and I'm going to go and fuck them up in the next game. You watch film to see what you can improve on and look at what the other team is doing, not for the sake of hating them. You know, a lot of time anger can throw off your game. It's for the sake of learning.
Yeah.
And for the sake of understanding. And then, of course, it has to be followed up with the improvement.
Yeah.
It has to be. The people are too willing to be... to play the blame game.
Mm.
It's your fault. you are a terrible person for what you're doing.
Yeah.
On both sides.
Yeah.
It's much harder to be introspective and to say, what have I done wrong that led you to do this? What have I done wrong that put me in the position I now find myself? It's a difficult task, but it's one that must be pursued. It's one that we must.
Yeah.
We have to do that. Yeah. We have to be able to look inwards and look at ourselves and look at ourselves more broadly,
mm-hmm.
and understand what truly led to what's going on right now.
Yeah.
If you only are looking at the other person, you can never improve the situation.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
any situation.
Yeah.
You yeah. just can't.
Yeah.
And that's even more so true when you're the one with the power.
Yeah. 100%. And I think with that being said, I'm going to wrap up this episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. Contribute to any organizations that you can. There are millions out there at this point, on both sides. Just help someone, because again, it's valuable. But yes, yeah, thank you guys.
Yes, thank you for listening in.